Welcome to AmiSites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. Join the founder and CEO of Multifunding, Ami Kassar, and his co-host, Lynn Ozer, the president of Multifunding, aka the SBA Queen, as they help you navigate, grow, and stay in control of your business.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next edition of AmiSites. I'm Ami Kassar, your host, along with my co-host, Lynn Ozer, aka SBA Queen. Today, we have a special guest, my co-president of EO, but he is Aviv Graffi, president of the EO Israel chapter. And because EO isn't all of our life, he's also the founder and innovator at Votiro. He's dialing in all the way from Tel Aviv, Israel today, and I'm excited to learn from him, understand a little bit about his company, his history, what's going on, and some of the challenges he's currently facing. Aviv, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Ami, for inviting me here. And of course, thank you very much, Lynn.
So great to meet you. I'm excited to hear your story. Generally, when we have these podcasts, we want to know where you started and when the entrepreneurial spirit took over and when you wanted to, you know, do what it is that you're doing now. So tell us everything. Start from the beginning.
Okay, so when you just asked the question, when I started, you know, to be an entrepreneur, I was almost saying, yeah, that was around the age of 20 something. But now I realize that I think I was very curious and loved to build things since I was very little. So I think the answer is that probably I started with initiatives and stuff that I wanted to build and maybe break apart and then rebuild. Since I was a little kid, I didn't think about myself as an entrepreneur. You know what? Maybe even until maybe probably the last few years, I wouldn't even define myself as an entrepreneur, which is interesting. I think that it's all started probably, I mean, as you mentioned, I'm based in Israel. I was born in Israel. I was raised in Israel. And probably was, you would call me like a technology geek when I was, you know, very young. And one of the things that probably you know, and some of the audience you know here in Israel, you need to do your military service for 3 years. So I was recruited while I was in high school because I was very good with computers. I was recruited to one of the intelligence forces here in Israel, the A200. It's like the equivalent of the NSA. And in that journey of being in an environment of very, very talented, really young guys, like 18 years old, 19 years old, I found and I learned that, you know, nothing is impossible, because, and I think that's one of the things that actually influenced me. Because when the intelligence force, they were throwing a technological problem on the table, and as you're very naive, you're sure that it can be solved, and you're finding a way to solve it. And I think that when you're getting older, you started to be skeptical. You're actually learning, okay, maybe there's those caveats, maybe those restrictions. And you started to actually to be, when you're less naive, it's hard for you to do that. And I think that that's one of the things in my mindset, that everything is possible and nothing is impossible. And this is where I think one of the things that started that, obviously in high school, I was doing a lot of stuff that involved back then, like computers and computer security and stuff like that. But this is where it all started in terms of the entrepreneurial mindset, I would say.
God. So when did you break out into your own business? Where did you work? Did you go to school and to become, you know, a more sophisticated computer engineer or software specialist, cybersecurity, all the things that you've done?
Yeah. So after I completed my army service, I actually wanted to start to work within a startup company. And I found it was a pretty small one. We were starting like 15 employees. We grew up to like 40 or 50. And I was finding myself having discussions in the CEO room with the CEO and asking those questions. And now I'm looking back, that was a go-to-market questions. And I was like 22 years old, right? And I think that's where it started. About after a year ago, I decided, you know, probably my mom would like me to have like a formal education. So maybe I'll go to study something. And I thought that that's gonna be everything, because that's the most important thing, right? Yeah, you're laughing because we now understand that, you know, experience versus education, right? And I started to study computer science and economics in Tel Aviv University here in Israel. And I was still working for that startup. But after a year ago, I said, you know, I wanted to have my studies like full time. Quickly after doing that, approached by one of my army mates, and he said, maybe I have an idea. Maybe let's do something together. I said, you know, why not? And what I'm doing right now is like just studying. And I wasn't really enjoying, you know, studying, because one of the things I felt that I'm solving, like, you know, exercises, like homework that millions of students did before me and millions of students are going to do after I'm going to graduate. So I wasn't really excited about that, but I was actually continuing that. And we founded a company that eventually was evolved to the company I own today, which is Votira, a cybersecurity company, a product company. And while I was actually completing my degree, my mom was really happy. She is really happy. I completed my computer science and economics. And I also done my MBA in Tel Aviv University. So I was doing that actually while building my own business, because I didn't feel that education, that's the right thing. But I was really, really fascinated about market and how can I build value and really change something. And so that's where around the age of 24, which is almost 11 years ago, 12 years ago, so I was founding my own company.
That's great.
No, Aviv, I'm just thinking when I'm talking to you here, Israel has a booming entrepreneurial culture.
Yes, it does. Yep.
And one of the things that I'm sort of thinking a lot about these days is entrepreneurs' risk profiles, right? What creates and drives and maintains the risk that entrepreneurs keep over time? And what I wonder is if the army service and your talk about the work in intelligence, I mean, sort of these technology problems when you were very young and being called to serve and this kind of as an obligation to your country. What do you think that experience did to your risk profile?
That's a very interesting question. I haven't thought about that until now, but definitely I think that when you're being told this is a problem, we have to solve that problem. And that's really, really okay to fail and retry. As opposed to, we cannot afford, you know, like failing and that's it. So I think in that sense, I can attribute that to the army service. But in some way, I mean, I'm always saying I love risk. I'm saying about myself, I hate insurance, by the way. And probably the army service can attribute to that risk. But I think it's the environment of being around people with the same mindset, it's contagious. I think that's really, really that we can achieve, and that's okay to fail. And you know, in as an entrepreneur, you have some things that you fail in. But what I think helped me throughout my internship journey is, even if something bad has happened, like a customer, a prospect said, notified us last week that he wouldn't be continuing with us the process, the, you know, as part of the sale process. I mean, years ago, I would be devastated. I would say, oh my God, that I really wanted to have that customer. And you know, I understand that this is, you know, a regular course of business. So I think it's also affected my mindset in that sense.
It's very interesting. I think that taking risks and it's just inherent in owning your business. But the thing that you said that's most interesting to me, and I think that our audience would be interested in and agree with, is that how okay it is to fail. And I think that that's one of the things that divides people from entrepreneur, being an entrepreneur and not, is that people are desperately afraid to fail. And they live their life in a safe place so that they don't fail. Which it works out fine for a lot of people, but I don't think anybody who is an entrepreneur can have a deep-seated fear of failure. But the most important thing is that you just learn from it, right?
Aviv, tell us about entrepreneurs building companies in Israel. Or if people need capital, I'm sure there's plenty of that. Are they doing it with debt or equity or both?
Yeah, so obviously I can talk from, based on my experience in the technology sector, most of the tech companies in Israel are being funded by VCs, venture capital funds. I think this is kind of, you know, the most of the funding here in Israel. Some of the companies are being funded by angel investors, But I would say that most of the companies here are being funded by venture capitals, and they are everywhere. A lot of US-backed VCs, they have an office partners here in Israel, so it's pretty easy to access those. I think that a lot of, and actually I can reattribute that to the Army service, a lot of my friends, they own companies, and a lot of them actually raise money from VC funds. So it's very easy with one phone call to get to almost any VC. On the other hand, I would tell you that a lot of the entrepreneurs, and I would include myself in that, they're not necessarily good at that. I would say that a lot of entrepreneurs, they see the raising process as a painful one. And maybe that's something like culture, I think, around here, probably in the tech sector, a lot of entrepreneurs, they want to solve the problem, not necessarily, you know, the best fundraisers in the world. But definitely a lot of them are very good storytellers, which obviously help to raise some funds. So I would say the majority, that's probably VC that you can get on a call like with, you know, one contact, and some angels still active. We see here and there also that. I wouldn't say that a vehicle, that's something that is very popular. I mean, probably around the safe and stuff like that, it's still happening, but not from a traditional, like, you know, lenders and banks. This is definitely not what you'd find here in Israel.
Yeah, but that's probably, I mean, I think the same would be true for, I think you live in like a tech bubble.
Right.
And I think the same would be true for most tech entrepreneurs in the States. They are deeply using the angels and the venture capitalists, and that's their route to funding. But then there are, and I might not be your area of expertise, but there are plenty of other businesses here in the States that, not mom and pop, but more predictable cash flow businesses, where there are a lot of debt sources for them. And I would imagine that Israel probably has similar things that people need them. They're going to build an advertising agency or car wash, or car repair shop, or things like that. So it's just it's a different world. Aviv, tell us about your current company. What does it do?
Yeah, I started my journey in the cybersecurity market. The Vatura, the company I'm a co-founder of, it's actually started here in Israel. And the idea was started from the fact that I was doing some services before I even knew what I wanted to do as a company. The company was initially doing some services. It's back then it was called the security audit services. I was, you know, traveling around the world. It was a pretty fun job for 20-something years old. You know, meeting clients, and after 3 or 5 days of interviewing their IT teams, I was building a report saying, hey, these are all the security issues and this is how you probably can mitigate those. And one thing I found that was working for me 100% of the time when I wanted to demonstrate how vulnerable they are is just to take a PDF. It's called like a weaponized PDF. It's like taking Word document or PDF and make it and plant like a fake malware in it and send that to the HR department saying, hey, I want to apply for this job because I looked online, there's the open position. And I know Philip from the finance and Ami from the corporate. And please let me know if, I would love to continue the process. And on the other side, there is a guy lady that their job is to screen hundreds of resumes a week. So for them, you know, they have to open those attachments. So that was 100% working. They were opening their attachments and I was able to show them how we could hack them. And I was trying to think how we can really solve that issue. And I came up with the innovative technology idea that can actually, instead of looking for bad stuff in a document, I'm only delivering the good stuff in a document, like the text, bookmarks, images, everything that in that resume, instead of looking for the bad stuff. And it was just working 100% of the time. And that's on that basis, I founded the company Votero and the new technology, and of course, probably 15 patents. And that's how I started that journey. I started mostly in Israel. The company was bootstrapped at the start. We didn't raise any money when we started. We're just, you know, starting from the services. Then we found our first customer here in Israel, and then the second one. And like within a couple of years, we gained about 40 customers in Israel, mostly like the banks, insurance, government. And this was really, really fascinating and really good feeling to see that actually you're starting to do that on your own. At some point, we felt that there is kind of a glass ceiling. We couldn't break into other markets because when we were bootstrapping the company, we couldn't really, for example, hire a sales person or a sales VP in the US because we know how much it costs. especially in our market and sector. So we actually were struggling with getting out of Israel, and we found a very interesting opportunity in Japan. A partner, it's distributor, software distributor, it was scouting for technologies in Israel and said, you know, this is technology that probably I can sell. And we, to be honest, we said, you know, we heard that sentence from a lot of partners, potential partners. We don't buy it. But what they did is that they actually took the product and they just tested it for 18 months. For 18 months, they tested the product from, you know, they turned the product upside down and then it started to sell. Around the same time, we had an opportunity to raise funds from a family office in Australia. They were very fascinated about the traction that we started to get in the Far East. And within 3 years, we were able to generate millions of dollars of revenues solely from the Japanese market. One of the, someone told me like a couple of years ago that this is really interesting because the Japanese market, it's considered one of the toughest market to penetrate. And we actually started from the end. And that's actually brought us that success in the Japanese market. And that fundraising in from that family office in Australia started to build attraction in Asia Pacific. We actually launched an office and a branch in Singapore. And for several years, we were mainly focused on Asia Pacific, which is an interesting, looking back, this is an interesting decision. I wouldn't say that this was a decision. It was more like we were, you know, rolling and we got into that kind of city. Like a lot of businesses, right? I mean, I would ask a business, what is your vision? What is your strategy? Where are you aiming? But when we started a business, I think a lot of business owners are like that. We were more looking for the right opportunity rather to hammer on that specific strategy.
Right.
Who's your customer?
So our customers are most medium and large enterprises like insurance companies, banks, government agencies, say some utilities companies. Those are the companies, not the consumers, most medium and big businesses. Yeah.
B2B. How many employees do you have now?
So we have around 50 employees. We have an employees now in the in Israel, obviously. We have employees in Singapore. We have in Indonesia. We have in the US. I think that one of the things that once we started to get attraction in the Far East around 2019, the company was struggling because we kind of matured some of the opportunities in Japan. That was back then. And I was connected to a company. Initially, we wanted to do like potentially a deal. Then we said, okay, you know, they told me, you know, we want to invest in your company, but we need you guys to focus on the US, on the American, North American market. Because, and I definitely agree, this is where the big money in valuation for company in our space actually are being, you know, treated as something that they can do something with as investors. So in 2019, we raised an investment from Senatas. That's an Australian ASX traded company. And started the journey in the US with the first salesperson. And for 2 years, we started to get the first customers in the US, which actually in some way reshaped the product because we found that a product that might be perfect for Japanese or Singaporean market, we found that maybe that's a different story when we're talking about the North American market, which heavily influenced the way that we're working in terms of go-to-market and also from a product vision perspective.
Did you need to change your actual product? Did you get a different patent? Did you find
We had to change the product. I think in terms of, I mean, probably in the Far East, some of those markets are more risk averse. So they want to focus on compliance things and not necessarily, they're looking for the 100% protection as in the North American market. The drivers are a bit different. This is from the product perspective, but also from the go-to-market perspective. We found that while in the Far East and the Asia Pacific, we were selling through channels. We had distributors and resellers.
Right.
In the North American market, that was the opposite. The expectation was you get the first like 30, 50 customers. Then the resellers will say, okay, we might be looking to resell you. As opposed to the Asia Pacific market, I mean, I cannot sell anything in Taiwan, right? I mean, I don't know Chinese. I mean, it's like they're expecting Taiwanese to sell to Taiwanese. That's really, really okay that we would be selling through them like with the initial deals as opposed to the North American market.
Very interesting, really.
Aviv, continues and has been certainly challenging times for Israel the last 6 months. Can you share how it's impacted you and how it's impacted your company?
Yes, of course. So obviously, we're recording this episode now in March 24. Obviously, when we started the conflict here and the war in Israel in October 23, on the first few weeks, we were all in shock. I think that most of the employees, I mean, for the first weeks, they couldn't really work. Immediately, a bunch of the employees here in Israel were called for duty. In fact, until now, I have employees, including my engineering manager, my VP engineering, that is there on duty. So in some way, a lot of them were called for duty. Some ladies here that are working for Votero, their husbands were called for duty. So I think that in terms of the way that, I mean, the velocity that in terms of the productivity, I think that a lot of things were impacted here in Israel. I would say that on the other hand, a lot of the sales and marketing teams are located elsewhere. I mean, in Singapore, in the US. So it was, the impact was, I would say, smaller on the revenue side. It was mostly on the production side of the development here in Israel. I would say that these days, I mean, 6 months into that situation, I think that a lot of us, actually, we got to a new norm in terms of we back in the office. I'm recording that from my office. Schools are back. Things are getting used to that new normal because we all understand. I mean, we and the Votero, you know, folks understand that we need, if we want to get, you know, continue having that, you know, workplace and salaries, we need to work. I mean, we cannot really, you know, be in our homes and that's it. So I think that a lot of us actually got to that new normal and we started to be productive again. Obviously, I hope that this situation will be, you know, over soon as we all, you know, want to have everyone safe back home.
I mean, how does it work in Israel? So if your employees are called to service, who pays them? Do you still pay them?
So that's a great question. Here in Israel, the employers still need to pay them. And then the government would credit or would pay the cost, the salaries cost. But obviously the employee still getting the salary from the employer. The paycheck will still be received from the employer. Obviously, and a lot of businesses will suffer from that in terms of cash flow perspective. You know, if I'm still need to pay my employee, but the government would pay and all that process, you know, think about, you know, hundreds of thousands of those who were called for duty, the government is not that fast. So it might took 3 months to get those payments from the governments. So some of the businesses here, they were struggling with that cash flow issue. Some of the businesses were, I mean, the government allowed to have businesses have their employees taking a leave without any payment that was, you know, allowed by the law. In our case, some of the employees, I can share with you, even when they had the duty service, they were still on the phone. They were supporting whatever needed from, you know, work's perspective. But obviously, cash flow perspective, that these were, you know, tough 3 months.
Are you able to get financing against government receivables? Like, can the banks just float you a line of credit based on the fact that you have, you know, the government paying you eventually, or that's not?
That's not something that usually being done. I think that the first few months, the banks were also terrified because things about the tons of mortgages and that being taken while people cannot work, and some of their homes, maybe they're not living in their homes that they bought like 2 years ago. So the economic sector, the banking sector, they were terrified in the first couple of months, you know, from that potential debt issues. So I don't think that would be even something that they would be discussing with businesses. Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about your journey with Entrepreneurs Organization and how it's hopefully helped you?
Yeah. So I joined EO, I think about 4 or 5 years ago. It took me a while to join EO. I think one of the things that I found, because I joined EO, then I said, okay, I need to have my forum training. And that was January, I think 2020 or 2019. I said, you know, that was, I want to have something for myself. That was my birthday on February 5th. I saw that there was a training in London. I said, this is what I want for my birthday. I traveled to London. I was entering that forum training kind of room or venue. And I was sitting around the table and I felt that, you know, I'm home. I felt that, oh my God, the people that actually experience the same thing as I do, the people actually that having the same challenges as I do, because at some point, like, you know, for every one of us, the, you know, to be entrepreneur is kind of a lonely thing. It's not, I mean, I can talk about that with my wife, but it's not the same thing. I can talk about that with my friends, but they don't get it. So sitting around the table with entrepreneurs that are doing completely different businesses, but hey, you have the same problem with your HR manager. Oh my God, you have the same fear of those specific, you know, huge customers. And for me, that was actually a very good feeling that I can be vulnerable and people can understand actually, and my fellow EOers can understand my worries. And in some sense, to get the experience sharing and also to give mine. I am a member of a forum in Israel, obviously. I was actually attending several regional and global events in the last several years. I did the Harvard EO program, executive learning, which was amazing, sitting in the same room with 70, or back then it was 70 entrepreneurs. And, you know, for those of you who went through MBAs, when you're doing having that case study, when you're 20 something years old, you know, like you're reading the case study. That's the exercise, right? But when there is a question in your room and someone raised their hand and said, yeah, actually I was in the exact same situation. That's what I did. Okay. That's a completely different discussion. You know, studying that from and learning that from experience, not necessarily just, you know, from guessing. So that was an amazing experience. And I also attended the fun events in Europe, the Unlimited, several times. So that was really, really great. I joined the local board about 2 years ago, and I took on the president role for the last year or something. And yeah, this is a fascinating journey. I think that the fact that I can get into an event with yours, you know, and at first you hug and then you ask, what's your name? I think that's what it was for me.
That's so great.
Aviv, as you look into the future of the next 3 years, what do you envision?
So I want to have the company that I founded to be running on its own. I haven't went into that, but a lot of the things that I'm doing today is after I've hired a professional CEO in the US to run the company. So kind of in a process of moving aside and do the things that I like, and less the things that I don't like after, you know, being 12 years in this journey. I think that's something that is very healthy, at least for me. So I do want to see my company, you know, thrives and potentially, you know, involving an M&A deal to find a home for the technology and for the business I own.
Love it.
That's great. It's terrific.
How do our listeners find your website? What's the URL?
So the website is votiro.com. It's VOTIRO.com. Of course, I would love to connect on LinkedIn. It's Aviv Graffi. Graffi, and I would love to hear feedback. I would be happy to catch up on either entrepreneurship or cybersecurity or any other subject. and please don't hesitate to reach out.
I love it, Aviv. Thank you so much for your.
It was a pleasure to meet you.
For your story, I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for joining us today on OmniSites. Since 2010, multifunding has helped businesses achieve their biggest growth goals through creative and personalized funding solutions, working with a network of the nation's top lenders. Visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.